Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week was a head football coach for 34 years, and is the only coach to lead six different college programs to bowl games. In 1988, he led the Fighting Irish to the national championship. Nicknamed Sunshine, he's one of America's greatest motivational speakers, and his video, Do Right, is the top-selling motivational video of all time. His latest book is entitled Three Rules for Living a Good Life. His name, Coach Lou Holtz. And I'm Jack Grasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJI. I'm Jack Grasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to the legendary, iconic Coach Lou Holtz. Coach, first, 2 months ago, you lost the love of your life. 59 years with her, Beth, to throat cancer. We offer our prayers and sympathy, and we ask, how are you doing?
Well, thank you for asking, Jack. I just sort of struggling like everybody else. You know, when you live with somebody for 59 years, and for the last 22 years, she has fought cancer. And when the funeral happened, she was buried at Notre Dame, a beautiful event. People came around, all kind of friends, et cetera. But then all of a sudden, a week later, you come home, you got an empty home. You're by yourself. You're on the weekends. Thank goodness I have some good friends and a strong faith in God. And I've got to change my life to make sure I go to heaven, because there are a lot of things I want to ask her now that I found out that she passed away. We're going through all kind of financial records, et cetera. But I've been blessed.
What's the biggest thing she taught you, Lou?
I think it's patience and looking for the good in everybody. I've never heard her in 59 years of marriage ever say a negative word about anybody except me. I mean, she's just a positive, upbeat, very strong faith, but always saw the good in people, saw the good about life, cared about people more than anybody I've ever known.
Let's go back. You're 28 years old, you're unemployed, and Beth is pregnant with your third child. She suggests that you go attend a motivational weekend. It changed your life. Tell us about that weekend.
Well, the weekend came at William Mary when I was unemployed in the summer. I sold cemetery plots, and they sent me to a seminar in Richmond. And the speaker there was Zig Ziglar, a great friend later, who said that you can get anything you want if you help enough people go with day one. But my life was just, you know, struggling along. Never had any goals when I was younger. I wanted to be a garbage collector because I felt they only worked on Tuesday. That was a good job. But she bought me this book, The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. And in it, he talked about goals, and I never had any goals before. You know, growing up, my father had a third grade education. I was born in a depression in a cellar. Nobody from our family had ever gone to college, although graduated from college. So, and then I start reading, and he asked me to break down five different categories. And category number one was things you want to accomplish as a husband and a father. And the best advice I ever got as a father was, very early, an individual by the name of Dr. George Oliver, when our first child was born, said the most important thing you can do as a father, make sure that child always knows how much you love their mother. I've never said a negative word to my wife or about my wife from the children. Now, in the bedroom, that's different, Jack. But and it was great advice. The things I want to accomplish religiously, God's important in my life, but I don't preach it. I don't lecture it. But I hope the way I live my life reflects faith I have in God. And column number three was things I wanted to accomplish financially. I never had any goals before. Started saving money, started being on a budget. Column number four, things I want to do professionally. I want to coach at Notre Dame. I want to be a head coach. I want to win a national championship, go to Hall of Fame. And column number five, things I want to do for excitement. And the first thing I put down, I want to jump off an airplane, because I was an officer in the Army at Fort Campbell, and I'd watch them at the screaming 101st. And then I want to land on an aircraft carrier, go on a submarine, be on the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson, see the Pope. And I had 107 of them. It's an actual fact that when my wife, after she gave birth to Kevin, who's now a lawyer, went to work as an x-ray technician, I was a stay-at-home dad. And that's when I filled out the list. And I told her, here's 107 of them, we're going to them all. And she asked if we could get a job. So we made it 108. And that was an actual story, 108, but it really changed my life. The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. Wasn't a great book, but it did have a positive effect on my life.
You've been famous for one-liners, unbelievable one-liners. Same thing Zig Ziglar. When the two of you were together talking, what was that like?
You know, we serve so many times on these motivational conventions, et cetera, and speaking, and we play golf together. But he was the same off the stage as he was on the stage. You know, I think you have to look at the bright side of everything. It's just like goals. I still think about it. You know, I always wanted to shoot my weight in golf. And once I did that, I wanted to shoot my age. And 2-3 weeks, maybe 2 months ago, I shot my age. And now my goal is to shoot my IQ, which is a lot lower than my age. So you just look at life and you try to look at the funny side of it, not take it too serious. That's all it is. I was in the lower third of my high school class. I wasn't a very good student. If it wasn't for people like me, there could have been no upper half of the class. So I'm just a simple individual.
We're talking to Coach Lou Holtz, whose latest book is entitled 3 Rules for Living a Good Life. And he once famously said that he's the only man who's written more books than he's read. And I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Coach Holtz. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Coach Lou Holtz, head football coach for 34 years, and he's the only coach to lead 6 different college programs to bowl games. Coach, how did you ever get into coaching?
Well, I never had a desire to do anything except work in the mill. I had 4 goals growing up, I guess. I wanted a girl. I wanted $20 in my pocket. I wanted a 49 Chevrolet, and I wanted a job in the mill. And at the end of my junior year, my high school coach came up and told my parents I should go to college and be a coach. I never had any intentions of going. My grades were so poor, but in those days, in the state of Ohio, if your dad paid state income tax, a state university had to give you 1 semester to prove you could do the work academically. Even though I was a poor student, couldn't get in regularly, they had to take me for a semester. Fortunately, I had a great English teacher named Glenda Dunlop my sophomore year, and insisted you learn to read and write the proper way. And that's how I ended up at college. So I went to Kent State, and I played, and I got in the Army, and I got out of the Army. I'm going to get married to Beth, and I'm going to go coach assistant football coach at Cunningham High School under Earl Biederman. I'm going to teach history, coach a defensive backs, get married, live happily ever after. And then what happened, I guess it was around June 8th, that she told me she didn't want to get married. She wanted to date her old boyfriend. Well, at the time, I was offered a graduate assistantship at Iowa University under a great coach by the name of Forrest Debuszewski. I never applied for it. They didn't have graduate assistants, but unbeknownst to me, my college coach, Trevor Reese, called Forrest Debuszewski and said, this guy, I think, could be a good coach. I'd like for you to give him a graduate assistant. But that wasn't paid, so I wasn't going to take it. I'm going to go coach high school and get paid. But when she broke up with me, I wanted to get as far away as I possibly could. And that's when my good friend, Neva Stockdale, who rode with me all night, why she broke up at 9:30, 11 o'clock, we're in my 52 Ford Fairlane headed to Iowa. He said, Beth and I had a love-hate relationship. I love her. She hated me. Got to Iowa, got the graduate assistantship. We finished 2nd in the country, had a great football team. And then I was hired by William Mary as a full-time assistant coach after that 1 year as a GA. So I end up in coaching because my high school coach insisted I go to college to be a coach. I end up in college coach because my college coach recommended me for a graduate assistantship, but the most important thing was because my wife broke up with me, it sent me there. So I've never had any adversity in my entire life, Jack. It did turn out to be a positive if you react favorably to it. Yeah, we all have disappointments, et cetera. I'm an old man. My birthday candles cost more than a cake, but the one thing I do understand, as old as I am, that no matter how young or how old, you're always going to have problems, you're always going to have difficulty, you're always going to have needs, and that's part of life. Life is not having problems. Life is about handling the problems and solving them.
you coached 6 different college programs to bowl games, and you had a short stint with the New York Jets. The 2 most famous people ever worked for the Jets were Joe Namath and Lou Holtz. What's the difference between coaching pros and coaching college kids?
Well, I used to say about $4 million in salary, but that's not the case now in college. But when I, number one, I was offered the job with the New York Jets by Al Ward, who was the general manager. And I turned the job down 3 different times because it just wasn't the right place. You know, we had a happy family, young children, raising them in North Carolina. And Al Ward said, you ought to come tell Mr. Leon Hess and Mr. Phil Islin, the 2 owners of the Jets, you don't want to coach a Jet. So I flew to New York to tell them no. And they were so impressive people. And I called my wife at night. She said, you did what? I said, I'm the head coach of the Jets. She said, you went there to turn it down. Now, I went there and said, well, let's hope this works out. It'd be nice if it did. It's not something. I can always go back to college athletes. I get there. I'm there 1 month and free agency goes in for the first year. It's 76. And we have a great running back by the name of John Riggins. He signs with the Washington Redskins. 1 month after I'm there, we get absolutely nothing in return. Well, this isn't right. This isn't fair. But the biggest difference, in college, you control every phase of life. I mean, you not only, I felt we not only coach football, we taught life, how to be successful overall. In the pros, it's all about football. And you don't own the locker room. The locker room belongs to the player. You work with the X's and O's. But, Jack, you win exactly the same way. The way you win in college football and pros, exactly the same. You get a group of people that are talented. They understand their role. They're going to do the role. And they understand the obligation, responsibility they have to their teammates. Yeah, they may be making $5 million a game. But the important thing is the obligation you have. And whatever role you have to do it the best of your ability. And I used to say, we have a goal and you have a role. So you get the right people. You recruit them the right way. In college, you bring in 25 athletes. Maybe 12 of them aren't as good as you thought on the average. Well, you can't get rid of them. You just have to turn them around. You got to teach them. You got to prepare them. In college, that's the way you get it. In the pros, you get it by the draft. You get it by free agent signings, etc. So it's how you get the talent, but you win the same way.
You once famously said that the NFL stands for not for long. Yes. All right, 1977, you're coaching Arkansas. You're in the national championship game in the Orange Bowl against Oklahoma. I think you were 28-point underdogs. And what did you do a day or two before the game, and what happened in the game?
Well, amazing thing. We hadn't played Oklahoma since the 20s. Oklahoma had beaten Arkansas, I think, 108-0. And then I had to suspend 3 athletes that scored 78% of our touchdowns now. Jack, I've never, ever disciplined an athlete. I've never disciplined my children. What I do is enforce people's choices. You choose to do this, you're choosing not to play. You choose not to do your chores at home, son, you're choosing to stay in on the weekend. So all I ever do is enforce their choices. And so when they didn't play, we became the largest underdog there's ever been. And we get down to play Oklahoma, and it's the last game of the year. It's on New Year's night. And I think it was January 2nd that year because Sunday was the first. In any event, had a football team in this race. We had a team meeting, and they came in. They were very negative. I said, I know why we can't win. I want you to tell me why we can. Every day I pick up the paper, and I read about the great players from Oklahoma going to play, and I read about the great players from Arkansas that are not going to play. But I've never read anything about the people in this room. So I know why we can't win. Well, when they started thinking about it, they pointed out we had a great defense. We really did. Monty Kiffin was my defensive coordinator. Pete Carroll was my secondary coach. And they pointed we had a great offensive line, had a great competitor quarterback in Ron Calcagni, a great punter in Steve Leonard. Well, I wanted them to say they had a great coach. That never came up. But when they left the room, it was a different team. Why? We focused on what we could do rather than why we can't. And 4 nights later, we have the ball on Oklahoma's 3-yard line as a game in and taking a knee, so we didn't run the score up. We only beat them 31-6.
Speaking of discipline, you once said, discipline is not what you do to someone. Discipline is what you do for someone. We're talking
absolutely.
Go ahead.
I just don't believe that you can accomplish anything without discipline. Discipline is determining what you need to do and what sacrifice you have to make. I used to say, you have a goal, then answer these questions. What financial price you willing to pay to achieve it? What personal sacrifice you willing to make? What skills and talents you have to acquire to do it? What bad habits you have to get rid of? Who do you have to work with? And what's your plan? So discipline is, you just try to teach him to make good choices. That's all life is. Wherever you are, good or bad, Jack, or because of choices you make. You made a bad choice to have me on this show, but that's your problem. That's not mine. But once again, it comes down to choices.
We're talking to Coach Lou Holtz, who we'd have on the show every week if he would allow. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Coach Lou Holtz, who in 1988 led the Fighting Irish to the national championship. You had Timmy Brown, and you had two quarterbacks, Tony Rice and Terry Andrzejczyk, from here in Dearborn. And you were 8-0, and after a Tuesday practice, you met with the press, and they said, Coach, how was practice? And you famously said, my quarterbacks were so lousy today that after the first hour, I took the footballs away and I gave them live grenades. Ain't nobody even got injured. Coach, where did you come up with all those lines day after day?
I don't know. There have been three or four books written about famous comments I've said. And when I asked me to sign one of those books or autograph it, I usually write, the smartest thing I ever said was no comment. And you just look at different things. I used to have a lot of fun with the players on the field. I'll never forget that. We had an individual named Pat Terrell, went on to play 11 years in the NFL now, as a construction company in Chicago. Great, great player. But he's a receiver from Sarasota and could run, but he couldn't catch. And there we are, we're in practice, and we run a post route, and Tony Rice throws a perfect pass. He drops it. I get mad at Tony. I said, that's your fault. You know he can't catch. Why'd you throw it to him? Well, we end up moving to a defensive back. He's the guy that intercepted the pass against Miami, knocked down the two-point conversion and stuff. But Rocket Ishmael, players remember little things. First touchdown he ever scored was against Purdue. And he goes in the end zone. If you've been to Notre Dame stands, the fans are pretty close. He gets the end zone, and he goes, and he high-fives everybody in the front row in the end zone. I said, come here. I said to Rocket in a very stern fashion, Rocket, if you want to sit in the stands, you go buy a ticket. You want to play, you come sit on the bench. But you don't get to associate with the fans and still play on the team. It's that choice. Let's not complicate matters.
If Beth Holtz, Coach Bo Schembechler, and our Heavenly Father are listening to this show right now, God's going to say, Bo, you shouldn't have kicked off to the Rocket.
Okay? Well, you know, I love Bo. Bo was one of my favorite coach pregame. We both were from Ohio. We both were Mid-American. We both coached for Woody Hayes, and we both coached exactly the same as Woody Hayes did. And before the game, I'll never forget, it was raining a little bit, and just talking to Bo, we had the same philosophy. And Michigan hadn't had a kickoff run back in 60 years. Rocket ran back the first one. So we come out second half. They get down and score, and now we're up by one. And we had the huddle before, and I said, you know, they probably won't kick it to Rocket. I'm sure they won't. Bo's so smart. However, they're an arrogant group. Be prepared, because they may just be arrogant. And lo and behold, here it came. And there goes Rocket again. It was amazing. But, you know, when you have good athletes and they have fun and they trust one another and they believe in one another, that was the most fun about coaching. It wasn't about winning. It wasn't about the game. It's a relationship with the players. As I told the players, you do what I asked you to do for 4 years, and I'll do what you asked me to do for the next 40. And thank God the 40 are almost up, because they're wearing me out. But they did form a club called Holtz's Heroes. Everybody that played for me, they got the only organization to ever receive the Notre Dame Alumni Volunteer of the Year Award for running the food bank in 157 cities, three countries. They work with Ben Carson on their plan and dealing with youth. They do an awful lot of wonderful things. So I never felt I coached football, Jack. I felt I coached life, and the one-liners and the humor comes out because I'm going to try to enjoy life. Life's too short to go around with a long face all the time.
When you would come home and use those one-liners and those words of wisdom in Beth's courthouse, okay, Judge Beth, did she see the wisdom of those one-liners?
Oh, no, she did not have a sense of humor. I tell you, once I'm head coach at William Mary Jack, and she sent me a little love note. And so I took and I wrote dear and left it blank. I had it mimeographed, dear and blank. Thank you very much for your letter. I appreciate your affection. At the present time, I'm happily married. However, if my situation changes, I will keep your record on file, and I will call you immediately. And the only thing to wear in pen was Beth and Lou Holtz. The rest, she didn't understand. It didn't register. I was trying to act like, oh, I get hundreds of these. But I'll never forget, Jack, when she was sick. She left me a note on my chair. I do not exaggerate. It said, Lou, I can't please everybody in the world, so I'm going to stop trying. They're going to focus on pleasing one person a day. And today's not your day, and tomorrow doesn't look real promising either. And she left that on my desk, but she's a beautiful person. And some things I did was embarrass her. Like I have a bumper sticker on my car that offended her. We go to church on Sunday. She'd make me park in the back of the lot and park the car backwards so people couldn't see it. And I thought the bumper sticker was funny, but she did not think it was funny. It embarrassed her. The bumper sticker said, Jesus loves you. Everybody else thinks you're an asshole. You know, I have a lot of people. I'd be in a red light. I'd look in my mirror. They're getting out of the car taking a picture of my bumper. But she didn't think that was funny.
Speaking of College of William & Mary, that was your first head coaching opportunity in 69. The first year was a losing season. I think after the end of the last game, the press comes in, Coach, can you tell us what was wrong with your squad this year? In three or four paragraphs, you said, hey, I can do it in one sentence. What was the one sentence?
Well, we have more Marys than we have Williams. I think that's what I probably said.
Fantastic. Okay, you coached 11 years at Notre Dame. What was that like every week at Notre Dame?
It was such a special place because, remember this, Jack, I grew up as a Catholic. I stopped by the Sisters of Notre Dame. We walked out every day by noon recess and dismissal to the Notre Dame Victory March. In the late 40s, Notre Dame did never lost a game for 4 years. They tied a couple of them. But all of a sudden, I never thought I'd end up at Notre Dame, even though once I got some success in college, because they always had a Notre Dame alum, and I certainly wasn't smart enough to go to Notre Dame, but when they hired Air Parsegian, and all of a sudden, I thought, well, that might happen. When I got the call to go coach at Notre Dame, I was so excited, but I also felt a tremendous responsibility. I'm going in and replacing a beautiful individual. I tell you, Notre Dame has never had a coach any nicer or any more sincere than Jerry Faust. But he wasn't very successful on the field, but he's still a beautiful person. And it's a shame that Notre Dame didn't retain him in the alumni office. But I go there, and the first month I'm there, during Christmas break, when the athletes are home, I go in the library. I get out all the books on Notre Dame football. And in one of the books, there was a picture of the entranceway to Notre Dame Stadium with a sign that said, play like a champion today. I said, what happened to that sign? Nobody could remember it. And nobody, I must have been there under Rockne. So I said, we're going to get that printed up, and we're going to put it back there. And the players hit it. They're going to understand all the people that played before them, the obligation, responsibility, the friends and family and parents that made it possible for them to be at Notre Dame. So it just was special. You cannot explain it. I used to say this. If you've been part of Notre Dame, no explanation is necessary. If you have been part of Notre Dame, no explanation will suffice. But the one thing about Notre Dame, their philosophy basically is constant improvement. They never talked about what they do well. They're always looking at how they can improve, how can they change things. And I was so blessed to be hired by Father Hesburgh. He was a brilliant individual. And he hired me, and he said, I can name you the head coach. He said, I'm going to walk in that press conference and ask you the head coach of Notre Dame, but I cannot announce you're the leader of the Notre Dame football team. He said, I can give you titles. Titles come from above. He said, but I cannot name you the leader. He said, if you're going to be a leader, you have a vision where you're going, a plan how you're going to get there. You lead by example. You hold people accountable. You make sure everybody on the team shares the same core values as Notre Dame. He was so smart. I asked him one time at a dinner, why did you make Notre Dame co-educational? And in 4 hours, getting throughout President Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the Pope, Mother Teresa, he said, I want Notre Dame to be a great academic institution. And it could never be a great academic institution if we eliminate one half of the most talented people in the country. And that's why Notre Dame today is number one school business. You know, it's just special. I remember I come out of the office, it's snowing, you're tired, it's midnight, and you look up at the dome and it's snowing and it's June. The weather was terrible there, but other than that, just to be part of it, to be part of the student body, the spirit, you walk on that campus, and it's just something special. You got to be part of it. And as I said after the Miami win, it's a spirit. And if you believe in the spirit, you'll feel it. But if you don't believe in the spirit, you'll never feel it. And the one thing I felt I had an obligation, Jack, was to teach the players to appreciate and be loyal to their University of Notre Dame, and they have done that.
You once famously said that God doesn't care if Notre Dame wins, but I believe his mother sure does.
Well, what happened was we had a luncheon before every game. We'd have 3,000 people. And the main thing at the luncheon is I'd have three different athletes get up and talk about their experience. And I had a kicker who ended up kicking in the NFL for 11 years, Craig Hendrick. He gets up instead of talking about his experience in Notre Dame. He goes into a tirade how unfair I was to kickers. He said, we're the only school in the country that travels with one kicker and three priests. And that was true because he did all the kicking. And the sucker wouldn't let go. And he said, I don't have anybody to talk to him pregame, warm up. And so when I got up, I said, Craig, you're right. But if you kick better, we'd only need to travel with one priest. You know, it's just a thing. Well, we're playing Miami and I can win. I sit down, and the guy gets up to give the invocation. He looks at me and said, Coach, my name's Father Leo. I do not remember his last name. But the reason I remember Father Leo, that's my middle name. He said, I'm a Catholic priest. I'm the team chaplain of Miami. Been there for several years. We've won 30-some games. We plan on winning this. And I promise you that God doesn't care who wins the game. Let us pray. And so when it came my turn, I got up and said, I agree with you, Father God. But I promise you, his mother has great interest in the outcome of this game. So that's how that conversation came about. And it came about because of what somebody else said.
Tom Bloom once took me to one of your famous Friday afternoon luncheons, and then you took questions. And there was a little 10-year-old girl, and she got up and she said, Coach, do you think a girl will ever play for Notre Dame? And you said, Susie, can you kick a 45-yard field goal? If you can, you're playing tomorrow. And I'm Jack Crisill, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crisill. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Coach Lou Holtz, nicknamed Sunshine. He's one of America's greatest motivational speaker, and his video, Do Right, is the top-selling motivational video of all time. Coach, the COVID pandemic, unprecedented times, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I tell you what, my thoughts are not always very positive. For 6 months, I've been quarantined. Can't leave, can't travel, can't do anything. But I think that great leaders have to look at things from both points of view. As a football coach and as a leader, you had to look at it from a player's point of view, but you had to look at it from a coach's point of view as well. Scientists don't. Scientists only look at it from one point of view. And when you only have the doctors telling you exactly what you can do, what you can't do, until there are absolutely no serious illness whatsoever. I think sometimes the cure is much worse than the illness. I found out with my wife, who struggled with cancer for so many years, had prescribed prescription, and the side effect was worse than the problem that they were dealing with. It's the same thing here. Yeah, you can lock everybody up, make everybody wear a mask. Nobody can talk. Nobody go to school. Children can't go to school. But you look at the ramifications. We had more suicides in the month of April than we did in all last year. You look at the economic problems that it presents on everybody else. The list goes on and on. And the fact that children can't go back to school, and it's a fact that I think it. Now, these statistics aren't actual, but they're pretty close. There have been like 60 people die from COVID under age 20. And 2 years ago, influenza flu, there were 190 people died, I think. And now we don't let children go to school, particularly the at-risk children. You're going to keep them at home. You need to get out. You need to learn to face-to-face, to interact with people, to get along with people, et cetera. I just think it. They have overreacted on this. Yes, older people are a problem. There's no doubt about it. If you have a respiratory problem, if you have diabetes, if you're overweight, and if you're elderly, yes, you have to be very, very careful. However, there is a drug out today that if you have 30% lung effect, effectiveness of your lungs, you can have COVID. You take this pill, $50, you only take it one time, you'll be cured in 24 to 48 hours. You don't read any of that because it's all about the election. It's all about disruption. It's all about chaos. It's all about everything else except what is right for the people. What, this was the home of the free and the brave. We are very free. We sure aren't very brave. There's a risk in everything you do. When people stormed Normandy, they knew there were going to be cancer. There's going to be a problem, but they had to do it to defend our way of life. Where is our way of life right now? You can't go to church. Oh, we can't have you going to church because of the virus. But you can go to the abortion clinic. You can go to the liquor store. You can go to the pet store. And you can go protest chest to chest. Nobody, no mask. That's okay. But boy, you can't go to church. Where is the insanity in this country?
You've been very strong that we should have college football. Speak on that, please.
Well, I think this that college football is very important, and I think college is very important, but in classes as well. There have been, I don't know, maybe 400 positive tests on the college level for COVID-19, but I do not know of a single athlete that's been hospitalized from it. I know my son's head coach at Louisiana Tech. He's won six straight bowl games. Nobody's ever done that before and still counting. And he'll have somebody test positive, and the guy, coach, you're kidding me. I feel great. I have no sniffles, no cough, nothing else. It's just part of life, and we just shut everything down. Now, I say this, that if you feel that you might have a problem, don't play. But the problem is the media is scared of young people. Young people, Jack, and I do not exaggerate this, look on COVID the same as they do cancer. If you have COVID, oh, you're going to die. There's no future in that. And nothing could be further from the truth for younger people. It's all part of it.
I've heard it said that parents today, in the mistaken name of love, try to prevent their kids from experiencing the very things that made the parents who they are. Why do they do that?
I think it's a very good evaluation, Jack. And the problem we have with young people today, everybody got a trophy. There's no valedictorian, there's no homecoming queen, et cetera. Everybody's always the same. They got everything they wanted the way they got it, and just maybe by crying, et cetera. What really makes this country great? And I think this is a great country. I served as an officer in the Army. And I tell you, you learn the obligation and responsibility you have to your country and to your fellow soldiers. And I think that is so important. People say, what's the difference between athletes today and 40 years ago? Today, everybody talks about their rights and their privileges. 40 years ago, we talked about our obligation, our responsibility. You join the military, you join a business, you join a team, you bring a child in the world, you join a spouse, you have obligation, you have responsibility, and you must honor them. Right now, it's all about me. This is what I think. It's all about, and when doctors only look at it from one point of view and never look at it and say, what's in the best interest of the individual in the long run? We're going to have casualties. That's all part of it. But it's a shame that we shut everything down. The greatest society in the world. Why do millions of people want to come to this country and nobody wants to leave it? We're trying to build a wall, not to keep people in, but to keep people out because it's Americans' way of life. Yes, come here. Both my grandparents came to this country, but they came here through Ellis Island. As a matter of fact, when I got an award at Ellis Island, we looked up what ship all our grandparents came on, both mine and my wife as well. So I agree with you along that line. I think we have to move on. There's risk in everything we do. Use intelligence. Don't risk anything. I grew up where without a helmet, riding a bike. I rode a car without a seatbelt. We wrestled the back of a truck while it was driving. Everybody had this BB gun. We shot it. We understood that if there was a ramifications, we're responsible for it. But it was our choice. Today, people want to have free choice, but somebody else is always responsible for it. And it's like everything else. How about just take a responsibility for what you do, and particularly politicians?
As our time winds down together, what advice, closing advice to our young people today?
I think it goes back to the little book I wrote, Jack, and that's life is nothing more than making good choices. If I've been your age, you've never been mine to a young people, so I'll say that. You believe in yourself and make good choices. Wherever you are, you choose to do drugs, drop out of school, join a gang, get tattoos from top to bottom, you're choosing to have difficulty in life and stop blaming me. That's the choice you make. Now, it's not difficult to make good choices. You learn three simple rules. You try to do the right thing and all the time. There's never a right time to do the wrong thing. Never a wrong time to do the right thing. You just try to do the right thing. Why is that important to do what's right? Because it's the only way you can generate trust between two people. You cannot be married if you can't trust one another. I had to have athletes I can trust. They got to be able to trust me. Wouldn't it be nice if we could trust the politicians? And why can't we? Because they don't do the right thing all the time. But that's why it's important. Do the right thing. Rule number two, do everything the very best of your ability. Not everybody can be All-American, All-Conference, First Team. You can be the best you're capable of being. That's all I ask you to do. And rule number three is let people know you care. My wife has given one interview in her entire life, Jack, and they asked her, it was about cancer. What'd you learn from having cancer? And she said, I learned how much my family loved me. We didn't love her anymore. We showed it. Why do we have to wait for somebody to have a catastrophe in life before we reach out and say how nice you are? Why do we have to wait till somebody pass away till we say nice things at the eulogy? Why do we have to wait? I get 5,000 sympathy cards over my wife. I wish that we could have sent them to her when she was sick, when she could have enjoyed it and understood it. But too many times. So just try to do the right thing. Do the best you can. Show people you care. And you always make good choices. Not only that, you'll generate trust. You'll generate a commitment to excellence in what you do. And people know you genuinely care. You'll never meet anybody again. Doesn't need a smile, kind word, encouragement. That's just life.
Coach Sunshine, thanks again. You were on in 2006. You still got it. You still got it, Coach. Okay. God bless.
Yes. Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Brazula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.